This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Champion versus champion fever is sweeping the UFC, and Cormier versus Miocic is official for UFC 226. Love it, like it, hate it, we'll discuss it. Age ain't nothing but a number for Jacare, but what about Lyoto? Machida faces Anders this weekend. Will he be able to hang with the young upstart? Ronda Rousey joins the WWE full-time. Everyone wants to fight Nate Diaz, and we are joined by undefeated Canadian Jeremy Kennedy before his fight next weekend at UFC 221 against Alexander Volkanovski on the prelims. Joe, how's everything going?
Things are going good. I'm just have a huge busy month coming up, so I'm super excited for myself. Glory's back at 2018, so February 16th, Glory's back in Chicago, which is exciting. We had 2 months off, and I've not had 2 months off of kickboxing for so long, so I'm hyped to be back ever in my life. Don't worry, I got my fix of it. I watch a lot, and I still study a lot, but I actually have a lot of guys fighting for the first time at a professional level, and I have my business partner with Bazooka Kickboxing, Troy Sheridan. He's making a return to kickboxing since fighting at Glory 11 Chicago. We're fighting in New York, Friday Night Fights organization. I have a up-and-coming Canadian MMA fighter, Tariq. He's going to be fighting TKO in Montreal, March 16th, so I'll get to hang out with Robin Black there a little bit. And I have, it's not announced yet, but unofficial rumors, I'll start it. But yeah, my main guy, Rob Thomas, ranked number 4 in the world in kickboxing in the middleweight division, is looking to be in a big tournament. Winner gets a title shot in the end of March. So a lot of big things for Bazooka Kickboxing.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm finally getting that pro team that I'm excited to have and to be able to travel with and put a big mark as a coach in this game.
How many Glory events do you have in the next 2 months?
In the next 2 months, we have 3.
Okay, so you got Chicago.
We have 3 right now. Chicago, and then 2 weeks later, we have Rotterdam.
Okay.
Which is Badr Hari, which is super cool. He's fighting Hezdy Gurgis. It's not the Rico rematch, but still an exciting fight to see him build, and hopefully we see him go more than one round to see what he's got. And then from there, we go to Cali. We're going to go to L.A. And then from L.A., it's not announced yet, but rumors have it Brazil.
Oh, great. Wow. Yeah, that would be the first Glory in Brazil, right?
Yeah, first one. We're moving, especially with our new CEO. Things are going quick.
That's good. That's good to hear. Yeah, I heard his interview on the MMA Hour. I'm sure you listened to it because you're interested to know the direction of the company you work
even
for.
Even me, I was like, what's he got to say? Like, even with me, I'm like, hope he likes me. I never met him yet. Like, I mean,
like, it's a good guy to be good with. We're going to have a whole new announce team next year. We're going to have a whole new.
So I'm like, I got to meet him. I got to suck up and kiss up a little bit. But I'm sure he likes me.
He's apparently a great guy. So
yeah, his interview went well, and I like the direction he's going and what he's done for the UFC and the impact he's had. I think it's just going to be great for kickboxing, especially in the international markets. We're huge in Europe. To make it that much bigger, and especially now our former CEO, John Franklin, will really focus on the North American market where he really, I think, strives and has the connection. So I think it's a good picture and a good look for kickboxing where it's only going up. So pumped.
All right. Well, from kickboxing to the UFC, without further ado, we'll talk about the Ultimate Fighter undefeated season, which is coming up, and then it's going to be benchmarked at the end. Benchmark's probably not the right word, but I can't think of the right word right now at this time. But at the end of the season, we will have UFC 226, Stipe Miocic defending the heavyweight title against light heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier. And on top of that, there's a lot of talk of two other champion versus champion fights, which is Cyborg defending her 145-pound women's title against Amanda Nunes, the champion at bantamweight, 135 pounds. And, of course, you've got the long-rumored TJ Dillashaw and Demetrius Johnson fight for the flyweight title. Of course, Dillashaw, the bantamweight champion. He just posted a picture on Instagram of him walking around at 145 pounds.
Yeah,
which
I
is
saw that.
Where
I was
he needs to be.
That.
Yeah.
And his weight cut. But when he showed that picture of him at 135, he looked really drained. Like, that's 10 more pounds under that 135 weigh-in pick that he had. That's a lot of weight, especially at that size. I think it's going to be a lot more difficult than he thinks.
Yeah, especially since it's his first fight at flyweight. Like, I don't know. Those last three or four pounds could be a bit of a nightmare.
Now, even John Dodson's coming out saying, if I couldn't do it, you ain't doing it.
Well, that's ridiculous, though, because Dodson's saying, I knocked out Dillashaw, but that was like five years ago. Let's get with the times.
Well,
Mayhem Miller was the coach that season. Yeah, that's how long ago that was.
Yeah, he's trying to hype himself.
Yeah, but you know what? You know how you hype yourself, John Dodson? You beat Pedro Munhoz this weekend.
Yeah, he's the favorite, and a lot of people think he's the underdog in this fight.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll get to that a little later.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think of these champion versus champion fights? Because the biggest reservations that people seem to have is that, A, it hurts the contenders in those divisions because they have to wait a long time for their title picture to clear up. B, that one rumor that's going around is that they're all going to be at UFC 226, so they're going to have three huge super fights on one night, which I think is pretty crazy. But at the same time, people think that's going to hurt subsequent pay-per-views. And of course, C, whether or not these champions should be fighting other champions, and because you've got 50% of the belts that are up, hanging in the balance of just three fights.
I mean, if you put them all in one night, at least it gets it over with, and then we can go back to the regular picture and get everyone their shot. But in my understanding, the ratings, I know a lot of people say 2017 was a great year for UFC, but from my understanding, according to the numbers, they weren't as high as they were. They're actually really, they're down.
Yeah, it was a steep decline. Yeah. So, I mean, Dana White has clarified
recently.
So, is this
an option to get those numbers up?
I think so. I mean, if you're talking about
They need a new strategy, right?
Well, if you do three champion versus champion fights on one night, you go on a world tour to promote it because you've got all six of them there, so you got six different champions going across the globe to promote a big supercard, you're going to break a million buys, no problem.
I agree.
So,
I mean, make your money on that big show, and then... But, I mean, you also said in a few shows back that you don't mind main events that aren't title fights, right?
Right, yeah. I say that all the time. I think that that's something that they should look at a little bit more often. Take guys that you're really trying to elevate and elevate them before they have their title shot. Make some money off of them before you see whether or not... Like, for example, the example I always bring up is UFC 215 in Edmonton, where Francis Ngannou was supposed to fight Junior Dos Santos before he failed that USADA drug test. Why not make that the headliner? You had Alvarez and Gaethje on that card at UFC 218. Make that the headliner. Like, whether or not it headlines that pay-per-view or another pay-per-view, whatever. But those are the kind of fights that people are going to want to see. And, the baseline of a UFC pay-per-view is 150,000 buys at the minimum. You're always going to have people, 150,000 people buying it. So if you have to keep putting all these title fights at the top of the division, you're backing yourself into a corner. See what some of these guys do as draws on their own without a belt.
Do you like all main events as five rounds?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Get the guys practice, putting it through it. Yeah, I like the idea of getting the guys to practice that five-round pace. So if it's their first time, they understand what it means to do it. So I agree with that, but I like that idea. The most exciting fight necessarily isn't the title fight
exactly.
to sell, so no, I agree with that.
Yeah, so that's what I think they should be looking to do a little bit more. But I think this year is going to clear up a lot of the direction of where the UFC is going to go because we'll have the new TV deal done. We'll see what kind of pay-per-views they're doing. I mean, if you look at last year, they had two really big pay-per-views and 10 pay-per-views that were in the 150,000 to 350,000 range. But those two big pay-per-views, like the one, the GSP pay-per-view, which did around 1 million, and then, of course, you've got the Cormier and Jones pay-per-view that did, I think, around 800,000. Maybe that's the direction they're going to look to go in, is do two or three really big cards every year, and then let the rest of the cards not do quite as well, but still have that baseline audience that you're trying to appeal to.
But even the fight nights we're having weekly, they're not having that star power that it used to have, right? Even me, as I watch almost every UFC, every kickboxing, every martial arts event, and I'll look at a card and I won't know, probably 75% of a card still. Which I mean, it's good, and I'm still going to watch, and I'm excited to see a lot of new talent. But if this sport is based on stars and building stars, they have to do a better job at especially promoting these fight nights and maybe putting bigger headline bouts or something. But I think they're just getting too comfortable. And even with the Ultimate Fighter shows, I haven't watched an Ultimate Fighter show in years because it's too similar to me. It doesn't matter if there's a new coach. It's the same thing. I need something different. And I think this Conor era brought something. And now champions aren't... The champion just is not okay to be a champion in one division. It's not an accomplishment anymore. It's that two title, and it's everywhere. Like, even my fighter, Rob, already he doesn't have the middleweight title yet, and he's already talking like, hey, let's go for that light heavyweight eventually, and then, hey, let's go heavyweight. Like, everybody just wants multiple titles and multiple divisions. It's just a thing of the Conor era. I mean, I think it's great, something like what Demetrius Johnson is doing. He's dominated a full division, and now he's looking outside for these big fights. So that, in that aspect, I kind of agree with it. I think with Cyborg, we have trouble finding fights for her, so it's a fight. Are we exhausting the biggest fight right away? Then what happens next to Cyborg? Who knows? But I mean, it's good and it's bad, in my opinion, and I think it just depends on the fight.
I wrote a whole column on this that's going to come out on tsn.ca/UFC later this week, which actually is going to be my first opinion column that I'm doing, which I'm going to start doing on a weekly basis for TSN's website.
Yeah, you have some strong opinions. You should go with it.
I like to think that too, Joe.
I agree. I really do.
So, I mean, my opinion on these
just
three...
Just be bold.
I'm seeing a lot of...
Say it how it is.
Yeah, well, I'm seeing a lot of people in the media come out and say this is going to be bad for the sport. You know, it's going to water down the divisions, all those things that I said off the top.
Yeah.
But to me, the timing is so perfect for all three of these fights because of these six divisions, how many of them have a real next contender? Really, the answer is one, which is bantamweight. I think TJ's division is the only division that really could suffer the ramifications of holding up the division. Because let's say Dillashaw wins at flyweight, says, you know what, that weight cut was fine. I'm gonna stay at flyweight, have easier challenges, or I want to bounce between the two weight classes. Then you could see some casualties because you've got a Jimmy Rivera standing by, you've got Cody Garbrandt, you've got a Sun Tzu. Yep. You've got guys that have a legitimate stake to a title shot, that they could stake a claim to the title shot. But then, of course, you look at women's 145. There is no division. There's no rankings because there's not enough women to rank.
But I think
in
you have
division.
To have these fights, though. Like, in my opinion, Demetrius Johnson deserves a two-division champion. He's wiped his division. So, I mean, Dillashaw just gets that lucky chance. But that fight, for me, is for Demetrius Johnson.
Yeah,
for Dillashaw,
sure.
Right?
But I don't know if it's just for Demetrius.
Well, more for. More
it's
for.
More to cement the legacy of Demetrius where they can say, well, he beat a guy who was the bantamweight champion at the time.
It solidifies his pound-for-pound ranking if he can do it.
And the weird thing about Demetrius is like, I don't think that he's faced a low-level competition at flyweight. I just think that he's that much better than everybody. It's no fault of his own.
That's what this test is going to find out,
exactly.
Right?
Well, if you look at the odds now, Demetrius is only a small favorite. He opens as a more than a 2-1 favorite, and he's minus 130 now. So there's a lot of people that think that Dillashaw has the goods here.
Well, I just think Dillashaw's advantage is going to be in that dynamic striking, but Demetrius Johnson's not going to let him strike like that. His angles, his pressure, his distance control. I think it's Demetrius Johnson's fight pretty easily.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I think I'm with you, actually. I think that Demetrius should be more than a minus 130 favorite, that's for sure. But, again, if you look at all of the other divisions, women's bantamweight have no contenders right now for Nunes. She's beaten most of them. Some of them have already moved to flyweight. And then you look at, I think Ketlin Vieira is going to be fighting against Kat Zingano at UFC 222, I believe it is. So, there's not really a clear challenger. Raquel Pennington was going to be that challenger. She got injured in an ATV accident. Now she has to sit on the sidelines. So there's really nobody there. So her fighting Cyborg, I don't think affects that division. Mm-hmm. There's nobody in the Cyborg division. There's nobody at light heavyweight that Cormier should face other than maybe Gustafson. We've seen that fight. So you could run that back or you could do a more intriguing fight with
Stipe.
There's not much for
Cormier left after this anyways,
and there's
right?
nothing left for Stipe,
what does
right?
he have? One more fight,
one
maybe?
One more, maybe.
And then he goes and he rides off and he does a good job with his commentary.
Well, people are saying, what happens if Cormier wins both titles and then retires and then you got no champions?
Amazing.
That's great.
That's amazing.
Exactly. Let's get
it's
some tournaments
amazing.
Going.
And then you're going to have like an awesome get Gustafson back in for a title shot.
No, or do tournaments.
Yeah, tournaments.
Do tournaments.
I mean, not same night tournaments,
that. Like have one event
but
that's going
to
be, even I if think, it's a four-man tournament, you have Gustafson versus
that's
Ozdemir.
A little Bellator-ish. I don't know if UFC's
well,
into
Bellator
that.
Well, Bellator had a long
one,
but the UFC did do something similar back in the day, I believe, with the heavyweights. Where
years
it was like kind of a de facto four-man tournament.
Yeah, that was years and years ago, though. But
so
I
do
just,
that in heavyweight. Let's get some new contenders
like
going.
Add some
Open
new
those
dimension.
Up. Yeah. And maybe Miocic ends up winning the heavyweight title again, or he ends up fighting Kane, or, you know. You're going to just add more excitement if that happens.
What's your initial thoughts on DC and Stipe?
God, I keep bouncing back and forth on it.
I know.
I would go with Stipe. I think that if I'm forced to make a pick, I think Stipe is the younger guy. I think Stipe is the more powerful guy. I think that wrestling is going to offset. Like, I think Cormier will be able to get a takedown here or there, but I think that keeping Miocic down will be problematic for him because Miocic is really fast, for heavyweight. And then if you look at the striking. Yeah, like the striking, I think Miocic is probably a better striker, but Cormier can hit.
Yeah, but I don't think Cormier's going to let him hit, right? He's just going to stay outside and try to just grab him and try to clinch him up and see what he can do
Maybe.
From there, right?
Yeah,
Maybe.
So it could go either way. Like that fight in my head has been bouncing back both ways. I
well,
don't really know.
That's
how
why it's a good fight.
But that's why these champion versus champion fights are all
fight.
Good fights.
And DC brings it, man. Every time he fights, it's an exciting fight. He brings it. So I'm pretty pumped to see that.
Me too.
I think that's probably the fight I'm most excited for right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. And TJ and DJ, I'm
Or
also,
maybe the Khabib Ferguson is up there too. But
there are a lot of good fights that are being made
DC,
now.
Stipe,
So again, I like all three of these champion versus champion fights. And I think if they put them on the same night, you're building a super card, and I don't think any fans are going to, you know, I think you'll be able to attract an audience from outside, and you'll get to showcase six of your top talents all at once.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it. I just don't want to hear. I just think the idea of two division champions has now become too much of a thing. I mean, not just for, I think it's great. I think it's great for the sport. It's exciting. It's new. People like boxing can walk around with multiple world titles. It's great. It's great for the athletes, something to look forward to. But I still like the fact of, you know, dominate your division before you're a two-division champ.
There is a worst-case scenario, which is that every challenger wins. Because now you've got two belts on,
exactly.
50% of the belts monopolized by three people. Yeah. That could be a problem. I'll admit that. That could be an issue.
Yeah, defending it. How do they do it? Do they have to give one up?
Yeah, they might have to give one up. And then
which
really...
I mean, which is kind of like, now why? Like, I mean, I get it, but it's, we'll see. And then what? What's the next step? We need three division champions to make it a thing?
Like, hey, why not?
We're going to go.
Let's get McGregor versus Woodley.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know. Demetrius Johnson could do it, maybe. We'll see.
What? He's only...
Well, he'd have to go to, like, Holloway?
Well, he'd have to move up to bantamweight first to win the bantamweight title because he's defending the flyweight title. So he'd have to move up and fight Dillashaw again at Dillashaw's weight class, right? And
then that's true. I never thought about that.
Yeah, so Demetrius...
So Demetrius doesn't even get the two-title option.
Demetrius doesn't get the two-title option.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that.
Neither does Cyborg and neither does Stipe.
Yeah.
But then again, I don't think they care. Like, I think the payday is good.
One
interesting thing that came out was that Cormier called Stipe before agreeing to the fight and said, like, listen, I think we should do this, but, like, this is the amount that we should ask for.
Yeah, I saw that.
Fighters should do that more.
Yeah, why not?
Get on the phone. Those guys are friends.
It's true, though. Yeah. Like, if you're someone as a fighter, now that I see the management side of things, if you're in a fighter and you start someone like Nagano, for example, if you get, like, okay, I'm going to get a three-fight deal this year, but in these three fights, all of a sudden you went from unknown to world championship, like, you now are fighting world championship for your base rate of, you know, 10 to show, 10 to win. And a lot of, like, organizations outside of the UFC, like, they don't change that. Even though you're now fighting the best fighter in the world, you're getting paid 10 and 10. So a lot of times guys don't want to move up that quick, or there's no incentive to do it, or, you know, that's what happened to me in my contract. I moved up way too quick for my contract to be compensated the way I probably should have for my career. So that's one thing.
But they're paying it forward by letting you be their color commentator.
Yeah, there. But if I did it, they better pay it forward. But, yeah, that happens a lot in kickboxing because there's not as many fights possible. So you get thrown into these bigger fights. And so I like that. I mean, but it's up to the UFC. It's not up to, you know, Stipe if DC wants more money. Is the UFC willing to pay it? I think the UFC just has a little bit of other options to pay the guys. Like, here's pay-per-views. Here's a little side cash here. Here's there. So they get all money from all around where, it's got to be worth it. So
absolutely. Well, I'm curious to see what they do with these three potential champion versus champion fights. So they did just announce, at least Combatch is reporting, that UFC 224 will be in Rio de Janeiro on May 12th. And that, with the two Brazilian champions being Nunes and Cyborg, that would make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, they're really pushing for Cyborg as that next superstar, I feel.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean,
do you think she has
the
potential to...
She sold 350,000 pay-per-views in December.
Yeah. Do you think she has the potential? Like, I mean, with her... I mean, language barrier. Her English is getting better, but...
Yeah, it's quite good. You know what, though? I think Nunes is going to beat her.
So really?
If Nunes beats her, then we'll see how it goes. But I don't know. That's the big question, is if she can beat Nunes. But then who's next? Like, who's going in there next? Kat Zingano? I don't know. There's nowhere to go down.
Kat Zingano's been talked about, but, yeah. I mean, she has the potential to do
it. But then again, if Zingano beats Ketlin Vieira, maybe she can just have her choice of which division. She can fight for bantamweight also probably at that point. She's beaten Nunes before. She's the last person to beat Nunes, I believe.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I just hope Cyborg has the potential to fight. That's my only thing. And it's not always, you know, someone having a, you know, not cut weight to fight her. Like, I mean, I want to see legitimate contenders for her.
Well, and this is the weird thing. Like, they're doing this Ultimate Fighter season with undefeated fighters. But where's the 140? Like, why not have a 145 division Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah.
Build a division. But I think that they know that there's not a whole lot of long-term promise in that division. Just because Cyborg is in her 30s. Once Cyborg retires, like, the intrigue of that division just goes down, declines.
Totally.
But then again, heavyweight classes almost always translate to more entertaining fights in the eyes of the casual fan. They like seeing people go down. They like seeing knockouts. They like seeing
Even me, like, I'm always going to be torn, but all of these guys who get on the mic after, give me the fight of the night, aren't you guys excited? I'm not excited. When you guys sit there and throw sloppily and ask for fight of the night, I don't like it. I hate it. And everyone's like, did you see that amazing fight? I said, no, I saw two sloppy.
Are you talking about Drew Dober and Frank Camacho?
Yes. That's one of them I'm talking about. But I mean, like, it was sloppy. Like, don't come on here and ask him for fight of the night. Fight of the night's got to have more than just sloppiness. More than just, hey, look how much brain damage I can take. Give me 50 grand. Like, it's stupid. Stop it.
So who would you have given fight of the night to, let's say, in this past weekend in Charlotte? You've got the match in front of, card in front of you there.
Good question, who I would give it to.
I think from an entertainment
entertaining,
standpoint,
but
you got
Dober
and Camacho. But then, of course, Bobby Green and Eric Koch was a good fight.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad fight. At least it was technical. We saw some good adjustments. We saw Bobby Green do really well. We saw him getting popped a lot with the jab. He was getting hit with some low kicks, but then he made adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't a bad fight.
Felipe Bermudez dragged a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, see, he still won the fight, but it wasn't as exciting as I thought, but... I mean, this is a case where it's like, all right, there wasn't too many
exciting
fights.
Give it the sloppy fight.
Yeah, but I still don't enjoy it, man. Don't encourage fighters to fight like that. I don't know. I don't think you should be encouraged. Like, even someone like, everyone's like, Justin Gaethje, for example, like that. Everyone's like, oh, he's an aggressive brawler. That guy is the furthest thing from a brawler. He's a technical striker. He's a power puncher. He sets things up. He changes levels. Like, there's strategy to it. He uses good, strong defense to get inside and counter back. It's not sloppy fighting. And even when I started my career, people used to call me an aggressive fighter. I was like, it's not aggressive. It's technical. It's powerful. There's a difference. Like, you're not going to see someone like Gaethje fight the way Camacho and Dober did.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, the way when you pushed forward, it was for strategy.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, that's what I mean.
Distance was your friend. Distance was your enemy.
It's not just being, like, wide throwing, like, your elbow positions, you're still defending. Like, it's more like give one to take one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't agree with that.
But you excelled with closer distance shots.
Yeah, but I was defending. Yeah. I was blocking punches. I'm countering. Like, it's a strategy. It's pressure fighting. Pressure fighting is a style. It's a strategy. You know, it's a way to get inside safely and defensively. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just want to see guys not relying on that to make it exciting fights. My opinion.
Yeah. Well, this past weekend's card, we can go over a little bit, you know, because I'd like to just find out what you thought Brunson was doing in that main event. I mean, I thought that his strategy looked completely off.
Yeah. Yeah, examples. Let me hear what you got.
Well, I mean, for example, Brunson is at his best when he is a pressure fighter, when he's pushing forward, when he's dictating where the fight's going. He's never been taken down in the UFC, so I understand why you'd want to fear Jacare's takedowns, because that's his top weapon, is to take you down and control you on the ground. But I thought that the reason he got caught by Jacare was because he was leaving a little bit too much distance, because he wasn't, you know, aggressively striking and pushing the pace a little bit, because that's where Brunson has really excelled. I mean, it didn't work against Whitaker, but Whitaker and Jacare are different levels in terms of striking.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I thought Brunson's biggest mistake was basically throwing the game plan out the window that's been so successful for him, which is going forward, you know, attacking with your strikes, precision striking. It seemed like none of that was there, and that he was kind of a deer in headlights for a lot of that.
Yeah, he looked a little gun-shy. He looked like he was a little scared to pull the trigger and come in, but...
I mean, there's also in the back of your mind knowing that you've been knocked out by that same guy.
By coming in overly aggressive and getting caught on the way in. So that definitely was in his head, and I guarantee you the strategy was to be a little bit more patient. We got 5 rounds. Let's keep our space a little bit, but...
But having 5 rounds against Jacare is never going to be an advantage, because Jacare needs 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
To beat you.
That's
like,
stiff.
He just
power.
Needs
he
one mistake.
Good, man. His striking looked really good.
Like, Jacare's striking is good.
Striking
it has been good.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of stiffness to it, but
that's what makes
very
it so
powerful,
dangerous.
Very good. The power, like even that head kick, it went right through the guard, basically. It didn't hit clean. It was more just a lot of power behind those kicks, man. Like, I mean, very impressive. He looked good.
But Brunson gave him the time to set it up.
Yeah.
That's what I think was the problem.
If you're going to give space, the key is you got to move. Don't just give space, and you got to understand engage distance a little bit better. And that, what people don't understand is fighting is not about what you throw. It's at the distance you're at. You got to be able to control distance. If you're not controlling distance, you're not controlling the fight. You don't know fighting. If you don't understand the space between you and your partner, you'll never be a good fighter. You have to know it. So, I mean, guys who, like Brunson, could have moved a little bit more, pumped his jab, not stayed straight, angled a little bit more, circled.
He's very uniform.
Yeah, it's very predictable, attack in straight lines. But, I mean, still young. I'm sure he's going to get better from
He's not that young, though.
No?
He's 34.
Oh, I thought he was younger than that.
Yeah, see, everybody did. I was going back and forth with someone on Twitter. He goes, I hope this isn't another case of a young guy coming in and beating a guy who's past his prime. And I said, they're only 4 years apart. Like, yeah. Jacare's 38, sure, but Brunson's only
34. Just because, maybe because Jacare was older, we all thought he was younger.
Yeah. But this isn't I
thought Brunson was maybe 30, 31.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, all right, he's got his own gym back home. He's got his own little team. He brings in his coaches. But I think a lot of the criticism with him was a lot of fighters feel like in order to be successful, you got to take your camps away from your family and that kind of stuff. And I know Brunson stayed in Charlotte with his family.
Yeah,
right?
He had moved from, he was training at Jackson Wink for a good amount of time and commuting there, but now he's staying more in that area.
And a lot of people say, maybe he needs that sacrifice to do it, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a tough game, man. I mean, when you fight someone who's dedicated full time and half of your time is given up doing something different, you got to invest full time in it. I mean, to be at that level, maybe that's what he needs. But maybe he needs his kids to feel good at the end. I don't know. I guess everybody's different.
Any performances during that card catch your eye?
I was betting on the side, and I was pissed about the whole Dennis Bermudez. I thought he won that easily. At least 29-28, so Andre Feely won, but I don't think he should have.
Well, somebody gave Bermudez 30-27.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he loses the split. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think he got that fight. A little disappointing on my little side betting that I had.
Yeah, I thought the Ji-Yong Kim win over Kish was an even worse decision.
I don't think I saw that one.
Yeah, that was during the prelims.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that one. What about, you said you thought Bobby Green won.
Yeah, I thought Bobby Green won that fight. Yeah. I thought he was a little bit more aggressive, and I thought he was
Eric crashed
more
near output. The last. He crashed near the end.
Yeah, Eric looked good in the first round. I thought that Coke could have won that first round.
Bektik's body punch.
Oof.
That was nasty.
Bektik's legit.
Yeah, that was legit.
I mean, his loss to Elkins was a tough one because he was dominating basically like 2.5 rounds of that fight, and then just got caught.
Oh, yeah,
he's been
considered
a top prospect at featherweight for some time. And then, of course, you've got Gregor Gillespie, who I thought looked really good at lightweight. I mean, he's...
Yeah, everybody was impressed.
Yeah, he's a Division I champion at
wrestling's
wrestling.
On point.
Yeah. Yeah, and he just... I don't know why you put a hometown guy like Rinaldi in that spot where he's going to be like a 5-1 underdog, you know.
Yeah. He went for it, though.
It was nice to hear fans in North Carolina champion
really
Jordan again. Instead of... They haven't done that since, like, 1985 when Michael Jordan was on the Tar Heels.
All right.
So it was good to hear them chanting Jordan's name. Except you have to live up to the expectations of Michael Jordan.
That's
so,
it,
shoes so you're against a guy who's
huge.
A 6-1 favorite, and your name is Jordan, and you're fighting in North Carolina. It's just the recipe for disaster. You're just not going to have a good day.
Huh. What else we got?
Nah, not much. I thought Corey Sandhagen, who opened the night, looked really good at featherweight. He's a guy that I think has a good upside, and it was nice to see Nico Price bounce back.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, Nico Price, like, I mean, they still have him on prelim cards, eh?
Well, it's because he lost his previous fight.
Okay.
And he was a guy that was considered a big up-and-comer, but he lost his last fight. So he, I guess, takes a little bit of a step back in his career. And Raya DeMarcos, the Canadian, she dominated Juliana Lima, so that was nice to see. First Canadian to fight in the UFC in 2018 is successful.
Yeah,
and another
nice.
Interesting stat was Brazilians before Jacare fought were 0-8. They're 1-8 now on the year.
Really?
Brazilians, the UFC.
What's going
They'll
on?
They'll have a good chance this weekend in Belém to change those fortunes with a Brazilian in pretty much every fight.
You know what? I'd be curious to see, like, if you got all the countries and seen, like, the fighters and how many wins they have, like a Brazil versus Russia style, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I'm sure somebody has those stats.
Yeah, like, I'm sure the Russians, man, I'm telling you.
They must have the best win percentage.
For sure.
Yeah.
I would have to say for sure. Over any.
Over
I mean,
Brazil
the U.S.
the
would have too many fighters, probably.
Well, you still can draw a percentage from it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Even using this card as a sample size, like, how many people outside of America, I mean, I guess all the Brazilians lost for the most part, but, you know, Americans win and lose because they fight each other for the most part. So UFC is going to Belém, Brazil this weekend, and Lyoto the Dragon Machida headlines another card in his hometown. You know, this might be a case of a guy who's old and past his prime against a young up-and-comer with Eric Anders. A very interesting fight for Eric Anders to take. They can certainly help push him into the rankings in the middleweight division, or at least move him up the rankings. But this is actually a really good card. I like this card from top to bottom. I think that there's a lot of interesting things to look at here.
What's your initial thoughts on Anders?
Well, I think Anders is a really good up-and-coming fighter. He's a good striker. He's a decent grappler. But honestly, and like we'll get to our picks later on. I think he's way over his head here, and
really?
I can't believe that the line is Anders as a 3-1 favorite. My pick's going to be Machida this week, but like, look at who Machida's lost to. You know, he lost to Brunson. He got wiped out by Brunson, but Brunson was like a borderline top five guy. Lost to Weidman when he fought him for the championship. Lost to Yoel Romero. Outside of that, like, he has not lost to anybody that has not been top level, like high level competition in his career.
It's just because the losses are back to back, right? There's three losses in a row.
Yeah, but there was a 2-year layoff between those losses, right? So I mean, what does Machida have left? That's what we're gonna find out. But I think that if you're gonna lay Anders is a 3-1 favorite, you must have a lot of faith in this guy because he's fought twice in the UFC. Against guys that are nowhere near the level of competition with Machida. His best asset is his striking, and you're against the guy whose counter-striking might be the best like in UFC history in Lyoto Machida.
Yeah. It's a tough fight. I don't understand. That's why my first question, before I even said anything, was what's your thoughts on
Anders? Well, I mean, again...
I'm surprised that he's a favorite.
Yeah, well, this is one of those spots where they're trying to elevate somebody, and... They might elevate him, or they might get to keep Lyoto around a little bit longer and have him as a headliner. It's a win-win for the promotion.
Well, I mean, Anders 10-0, good record, but he still hasn't really the names, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if he's only...
He knocked out Rafael Natal, who was a good fighter, but that was Natal's last fight.
And then Marcus Perez, December 9th. I mean, still, I don't know, he came out and whatever, he called for Machida, but...
Good.
You got it, but
that's,
I mean,
right.
Whoever you call for, he did the right thing. He did the right thing.
It's a win-win for him, too,
it's
because
a
if he loses, he'll learn something.
And if he wins, he just knocked off one of the best,
best
in the division,
time.
Right?
Yeah, a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of criticism. What's your take on his nickname, Ya Boy?
I like it.
I don't mind it.
I don't know
why people are hating it. I think it's good. It's creative. It's different. What do you want him to be,
fun.
You know?
Who cares?
Eric, you know, some generic name?
He's not Corey Beeston 25-8 Anderson, which is one of the worst nicknames ever. No disrespect to Corey Anderson, who I think has changed it since as a result of the backlash. But I like Ya Boy.
Yeah, I don't mind it. It's different.
Yeah.
Something different.
But Machida, I think Machida might be one of the most live underdogs at that kind of price that we've seen in a long, long time.
So I was going to say, it being in Brazil, previously I would have been like, okay, TRT, Brazil, maybe, but now with USADA, I mean.
But Machida was never a TRT guy, and the supplement that he got popped for when he failed his drug test was like a fish oil type thing. It was nothing that really could have helped you, and it was on the label that he, with the supplement that he had, he just didn't know it was a banned substance. Like he used a supplement.
This was pre-USADA.
Yeah, it was like DHEA-12 or something like that. No, it was during USADA.
During USADA.
And he basically...
He
went to USADA and said, this is what I use. And they were like, yeah, that substance that's on the label is an illegal substance. He was like, I had no idea. It wasn't like... you know, like a turinabol or like an anabolic steroid or anything like that, or any sort of testosterone booster. It was a supplement that he thought that he had used previously that he thought was legal, and he was forthright about it. So, and they really gave him a long suspension too. I think they gave him an 18 month suspension, which is a long time when you're an older fighter.
Just under 2 years.
Yeah. So again, I don't think Machida is one of these guys who's been a career doper. He was always really small as a light heavyweight, even when he won the championship. So. And that's why he's fighting at middleweight now. But honestly, I think, Machida's one of the best karate guys in the world. And this is going to be a really steep, tough test for Anders, I think. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, Anders could run through him as a young guy. And Anders' backstory is, you know, he used to be a linebacker for the University of Alabama. Won a BCS championship at the highest levels of college football. And then just made a transition over to fighting when he didn't make it to the NFL.
Yeah, and he's 30. I just wanted to check how old he was. 30?
Like,
yes, still young.
Still young. Still young in his career, especially. He doesn't have a lot of miles on him.
Yeah, and I think that's an advantage. If he's got that mindset, which it feels like he does, I've heard him talk and his confidence. And if he has that confidence and it can translate it, that football aggression, he has. He's an athlete, you know, to play at that level of football, you're definitely a special athlete. But, man, this is martial arts, like you said. I don't see how he's such a favorite in this. Don't get it.
Yeah, a really good co-main event with John Dodson and Pedro Munhoz. I'm a big fan of Munhoz. I think Munhoz is a really, really creative guy. But, you know, styles make fights, and I think that Dodson has a good edge here. I just think that when you look at output and speed, that Dodson's going to be able to, you know, go bop, 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 get in and out, control the striking.
Footwork.
And Dodson doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. So that's where I think Dotson might, just from a stylistic standpoint, have a good advantage here over Munoz.
Yeah, I think what scares everyone with Munoz is just his finish ability with the guillotine, right?
Right, and so, I don't think Dotson's going to give him those kind of positions.
I think he's too intelligent for that. He's been around the game of martial arts. I usually find guys who get caught in guillotines are, you know, newer guys to the ground and to MMA. I mean, many experienced guys will not get caught with that. So
yeah.
I can't see Dotson getting caught with a guillotine.
And so, I thought Munoz was like a pretty underrated guy in the UFC.
Oh, great talent, great prospect.
Yeah,
but
and I think
John
Dotson
is really tricky. He's not a walkover, that's for sure.
And yeah, Munoz can be a top five guy, especially if he wins this fight. But just the matchup for me, I find is not, you know, I prefer Dotson if you're looking at strictly from a matchup standpoint.
Yeah, it's definitely a good pick if you want to go with an underdog.
But Dotson's
the favorite still,
yeah,
right?
Favorite,
yeah, Dotson's
yeah.
still a favorite. But I'm listening to guys like Schaub and a lot of analysts. They feel Munoz has it.
Well, I think the world of Munoz, and I think he's a very, very underrated fighter. It's just the stylistic. I think there's a stylistic discrepancy that's going to cost him.
And he's got
him.
The home
we'll
crowd,
see.
Too, right? He's got
yeah,
the Brazil the crowd, crowd in front of him. Maybe that gives him that little extra edge over Dotson.
Yeah, we'll see. I just think that Munoz's best path to victory is always winning by finish and catching guys that make mistakes. And Dotson just doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. But we'll see how it goes. Valentina Shevchenko making her debut at flyweight. Probably her next fight will be for the flyweight championship if she wins. She's a 10-1 favorite over Priscilla Cacoeira, who has been fighting in MMA for only 18 months and is a recovered crack addict, actually. It's an interesting backstory.
What? How did she get such a high-profile fight for her debut? Just being in Brazil? Does she have a name in Brazil?
She's considered a top 10 Brazilian female fighter in the world in terms of the Brazilian pound-for-pound, at least from what I've seen on Tapology. But she's been just running through opposition in Brazil,
and it's
on the regional scene.
She's my understanding from a striking background.
Yeah, which could pose
which some, walks
which,
in.
Yeah,
yeah.
Walks
maybe
in
why?
Shevchenko.
But that's probably
most
why she's taking the fight
in women's MMA.
Yeah, but if you're a striker, I think that's a
Joanna.
Good fight. Better than being a striker and having to go against a wrestler. At least you're more familiar with striking versus striking. So, if I'm going into the UFC for the first time, I'm picking a striker. So.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are betting on Shevchenko, obviously, because she's now a 10-1 favorite based on name value. But I don't know
I don't know enough about her. You know, Priscilla.
So we'll
Who
see.
Knows? She's got to be good. You don't just jump in and take fights like that, and you know. But Brazilians always have that hard style. Like I don't know. Like even you know, with Glory and kickboxing, we had a young Brazilian girl, Jadi Menezes. She came in and she just fought the champion now. Like she's got no experience. We're like, this girl's gonna get killed. But Brazilians have this tough. No, she lost. But they have that toughness to them. They don't care. They're not intimidated by records. They're there to fight. Brazilians are one of the toughest cultures when it comes to fighting sports.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially
and
the
she's overcome in her life. I'm sure she's not too worried about
exactly.
Michelle Prejerish versus Desmond Green. That should be a three-round affair. You know, both guys are good grapplers, good strikers. This one could really go either way. I know Prejerish is favored.
Yeah, definitely.
This is another one where the betting line to me is incredibly confusing, which is Timothy Johnson against Marcelo Gomes. Timothy Johnson as an underdog in this fight to me is like an incredibly live underdog. You know, he's just one of the better grapplers at heavyweight. Golm is 1-0 in the UFC, and he beat a guy that I consider to be one of the worst fighters in the UFC, in Christian Colombo. No disrespect to him. He was like 38 years old.
Yeah.
But Golm, outside of that, had only fought one guy that had a win on his record.
Yeah,
so
he's 6-0.
6-0, yeah. So the five guys that he fought previous to Colombo had a combined one win going into the fights with him. So just has, you know, he's going to be in deep water against Johnson. He's a favorite. It's like, no thanks. I'll take Timothy Johnson all day in that fight.
Yeah. Nah, I don't know enough about
that. Well, write that one down, Joe, if you're going to
actually make
these. I will.
I'm
going to
do
it. These,
I'm going heavy on it.
Yeah.
I'm going to put my condo on it, my car. It's all going down.
Well, we've got this
it's all on you.
This nice studio is good for you to sleep
in.
Nobody will notice you for
I
for
might
like
be sleeping in your son's
weeks.
Floor or some room. I'm knocking on your house.
Right now, the bunk beds are not in use in our room.
Oh, perfect.
So
there
my
you
wife's
go.
Sleeping with one son in one room. I'm sleeping with my son in the
and
other room.
I got
room.
The bunk beds.
And you've got open bunk beds. So if you need a place to stay and you want to bring, you know, a lady friend who's okay sleeping with on the top bunk.
All right, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
So,
come on, but I still want to win. I don't want to lose it.
Yeah,
it sounds fun.
Yeah,
it'd be fun to
stuff.
Live together in your kids' bunk beds, but I still want to live in my own place.
My wife would love it. She'd wake up, she'd have like omelets ready.
Yeah,
like
ready to eat. Avocado, we'll be training. You know? We're going to be doing kickboxing all day. Yeah. Like, it'll be fun. We'll be watching Glory and UFC all day.
Yeah, she won't like that part.
No. Well, but me and you, she'll have no choice. Yeah. She'll have to watch it.
No, she has a choice in the matter. Believe me, she runs the household.
Oh, yeah. We'll be the ones
We'll be out
sitting
in like
there,
a bar or something with our laptops watching Fight Pass.
Oh, yeah. We'll be the ones cleaning the house as she yells at us and we're doing everything.
Hey, that's how
life
is.
I've never
right
met
now.
Your wife. I don't know how she is. So I'm just making
assumptions.
You're not
assumptions. Far off.
I'm making assumptions.
So Thiago Santos fighting at middleweight against Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith coming off a big win over Hector Lombard. Mm-hmm. Lots of public support coming in on Santos. So we'll see how that goes. But Santos is one of the best strikers at middleweight, and that should be a fun one.
Anthony Smith seems to have put a good name for himself. He's getting on talk shows and podcasts and stuff. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, good. Yeah, he's a very outgoing guy, good speaker, good fighter. Second stint in the UFC, doing a good job so far. And one fight that caught my eye early on that's actually on the Fight Pass prelims is Davison Figueiredo and Joseph Morales, two undefeated flyweights, and that'll be a fun fight. So let's go do our picks. Last week, I got above even. I had a win. It was a parlay.
Yeah, you had a parlay.
Yeah, Gregor Gillespie, Mirsad Bektik, and Nico Price, just under even money. So I'm at $105.40.
Man, I've been
Eric
sucking,
Koch lost
man.
For you again. You're
$70.50. I still thought he won just because, like you said, I was looking through biased goggles, but
yeah.
I thought he did enough to win.
And as I said, I'm going with Lyoto Machida.
Yeah,
plus
that's
240.
Your bet.
Yeah, plus 240.
All right, let's do a little. I'm going to do a little parlay this week. Let's see what we can put together. I'm going to go with, dun, 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 dun. Who do I, oh, see, I changed last. I was going to go with, I like,
I talked you out of Munoz.
You did. You talked me out of him. I liked it.
Maybe I just did it for my own competitive
strategy.
Advantage. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm hustling you.
I'm going to go with, I bet against him last time, but I like him. I'm going to, cause he's awkward and very tough to get. I'm going to go with Tim Means as my first.
All right. I mean, if it stays on the feet, Tim Means is going to should roll. But if that goes to the ground, Moraes is a deadly BJJ guy.
I just like the awkwardness of Means. Mm-hmm. I always like that awkwardness. I'm going to go with, just to beef it up, Shevchenko.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with John Dodson because of you.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, hopefully I helped you out then.
Yeah, let's
see.
With
my analysis.
Just because I'm on that fight, I was thinking about going Munoz, so I'm going to go with it. Let's see it.
All right, cool. Well, Joe, I was joined earlier this week by Jeremy Kennedy. I spoke with him about his upcoming fight at UFC 221, which has a bit of an interesting caveat that we'll talk about after we're done hearing this. And this is undefeated Canadian Jeremy Kennedy joining the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
He is perhaps the best Canadian prospect in the UFC. He's undefeated and will be fighting Alexander Volkanovsky, another big prospect from Australia, on the preliminary cards of UFC 221 in Perth, Australia. It airs at 8 p.m. Eastern on TSN2, so the pay-per-view's loss is our gain here at TSN. He is Jeremy Kennedy, and he joins the TSN MMA show right now. Hey, Jeremy, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, our pleasure. You know, this is the second kick at the can when it comes to fighting Alexander Volkanovsky. Has it helped to have an opponent to focus on for this amount of time, or does it just make you more and more impatient because you've been studying this guy for so long and training for him?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. You know, it definitely helps in the preparation, but at the same time, I'm just ready to get this chapter closed, you know, and finish his business and move on.
I mean, you've had some canceled fights in the past. In 2016, you were supposed to fight both Mirsad Bektik and Josh Emmett, both of whom are now ranked. Do you feel like you could have been ahead of where you are now had you been able to fight one or both of those guys?
Yeah, I mean, there are different time frames and circumstances with those guys. Like, the Mirsad one was on a week's notice, and that just fell through with poor communication, and I just got a quick little injury, and I think he was supposed to fight Arnold Allen, and it was like a week's notice out in the UK. So that one didn't really come to fruition. And Emmett, I was supposed to debut at 55 with, and he ended up pulling out a week out. So it's cool to see him bounce down and got a huge win over Lamas. And it just shows that, you know, I'm right up there. You know, I'm supposed to be scheduled with all these guys, and they're not far away from me. But even though they're ranked, that just shows that with a win over Alex, I think I'll be joining them in the ranked division.
I feel like if Emmett gets a win over Stevens, he's going to be the most called-out guy in the division. He comes down, beats Lamas, beat Stevens, and I think he's going to have a big target on his back if he's considered a top three guy.
Yeah, I think he'll be short, close to the title with a win over Stevens. I think him and Ortega are pretty much on a league of their own right now as of call-outs. Like, they're pretty much going to get the opponents the UFC gives them, and nobody's going to really, it's hard to qualify a match with them right now just with their credentials, you know. Like, that was a huge win for Emmett. You can't take anything away from him, aside from maybe missing weight. That was kind of crappy, but other than that, a win over Lamas the way he did it and the what Ortega's been able to do, those two guys have probably got to be, talked about title shots right now.
So this UFC 221 card has some interesting circumstances, but the first of which is the weigh-in situation. I've heard it's a little bit weird, and I'm having trouble wrapping my head around it. Can you shed some light on what the situation is there for the weigh-ins?
Yeah, it's, I'm not too happy about it. So I guess there's no early weigh-in, and there's still no IVs or anything like that, right? Like, that was the kind of deal when they got rid of the IVs, they moved the weigh-ins up, so we had a lot more time. But now the Perth Athletic Commission won't let fighters weigh in more than 24 hours before their fight. So that makes the fight start at 7:30 a.m. on Sunday, which means the weigh-in's got to be 7:30 a.m. on Saturday. And to make it more confusing, they don't want to have the early weigh-ins. They want to have the public weigh-ins and early weigh-ins together. And then to make it nice and even more confusing, they don't want to have the public weigh-ins at 7:30. They would rather do it at 11 for the public, which means we got to weigh in at 11. So it's kind of like we kind of drew the short stick there, but I'm just making sure my weight's right on point, and I'm lighter now than I was, a week from now, against Kyle Bochniak. So I'm good to go with it. It's something that you can't control. You just got to dial in everything else to make sure you're ready to rock.
That's very odd, because you're probably going to be fighting at around 9 a.m. the next day, so it'll be less than 24 hours after you get on the scale for the both official and ceremonial weigh-ins, because they're at the same time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's very concerning from a fighter safety standpoint. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's exactly the big reason why I'm just really, like, these last 2 weeks has been, all focus has been on weight cut. That's the big fight right now is just have it dialed in so there's no questions asked. Like, I'm flying a long way. I got a lot of things to kind of deal with when I get out there. So that's why I'm going early, get that flight, swelling out of the way, get my everything in order, grocery shop, get it all, ordered up and settled so I don't have anything to worry about. And this is going to be the easiest cut. Like I said, I'm extremely light right now, which is nice. And I have to be. I have no other choice. I don't want to take any chances and come in a little heavy to cut more just because I don't have the time to rehydrate like I normally would.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say next, is you're going to have to walk around at a suboptimal weight, I guess, generally, so that you're not cutting that much weight when it comes to the actual weight cut, because if you have to cut a lot of weight, you'll be more dehydrated than you normally would be. And, that does make it a very tough circumstance for you guys.
Exactly. But the big thing is everyone's got to do it. So,
that's true. Level playing field.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm not too worried about it. I'm just making sure I get my job done. And he's going to have to do the same thing. So as long as he's getting his job done, then there shouldn't be a problem.
So the other interesting circumstance is that you're going to have to fight at either around 8:30 or 9 o'clock a.m., as opposed to where you would normally fight at 8:30 or 9 o'clock p.m. So when you get to Australia, are you going to adapt to that time zone, or are you going to pretend that you're fighting at night? I mean, that's got to play a lot of tricks on your mind.
Yeah, it's nice because I got to adapt to the time when I get over there anyway. So it's like I'm just doing it once now. I train at home. My hard training sessions are usually at about 10 a.m. to 9:30, 10:30. That's where all my hard stuff gets done. So there's not going to be much change there. It'll just be, like I said, when I go there, I'm just going to adapt to that schedule once. And he's going to have to adapt as well. So it's, again, level playing field. It's not like I got to go over there, adapt to my training schedule and sleeping pattern, and then adapt again. I'm just going to go over there and do it once.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I didn't think of it that way. So Volkanovski actually will have a bit of a disadvantage himself, because he's going to be fighting early in the morning on the time that he's accustomed to.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So he's got to adapt. Instead of fighting at night, he's fighting at day. and I'm going to be doing the same thing. And I think he lives in Sydney, where they're 3 hours different from Perth anyway. So still have a little bit of adjusting to do as well. You know, I'm not too worried about it. And with a week, I'll be okay.
You're a sharp guy, Jeremy. I didn't catch that. I like that. I like that you're realizing that. That is a good advantage for you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've done my homework on this.
So what do you think is about the state of Canadian MMA right now? Obviously, you're, I think, the best Canadian prospect in mixed martial arts right now. I know you've been training with a guy like TJ Laramie, a lot of the other Canadians. Are there any other Canadians we should be looking out for that you think are big prospects that we should have our eye on?
Yeah, you know, well, TJ's really impressed me. You know, he's really good. He gave me a good push, and he gave me a lot of good looks. So I got nothing bad to say about him. You know, he's going to be he's got a bright future ahead of him as well. And he's just so young. That's the great thing about him. And like, I'm used to being the young guy. So when he comes out and he's 20 years old, I'm like, man, this is awesome. You know, it's good to see new blood coming up as well. And I'm excited to see what Hakeem can do. You know, he's a prospect. He's a younger guy too. And he just got signed. He's still got some work to do in the UFC. But I'm excited to see, because his style will kind of skyrocket him if he can do the same thing he's been doing on the regional scene. UFC scale, but then, again, it's a whole different ball game. So we'll see. I wish the best for him. You know, he's a fellow Canadian. Even though we're in the same division and everything, if that time comes, you know, I'd love that fight. But I mean, I'm just still going to be rooting for him, just like Gavin Tucker. You know, I was very friendly and kosher with him. You know, as Canadians got to stick together. But when the time comes, if they're in my division, they're on the menu. You know.
Yeah, Hakeem's stalking striking style will definitely do him some favors when it comes to matchmaking, because the UFC always likes guys like that push forward, and he certainly fits that bill.
Exactly. It just comes down to how he can handle an elite-style wrestler, which he hasn't really faced yet in the in his career.
So you've been making a lot of use of the UFC Performance Institute in Vegas. I'm guessing, and TJ Laramie came out to train with you there. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I liked it so much training with him that I flew him back home to Vancouver to finish up with me as well.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, we spent about 3 weeks out at the PI, and it is just unreal out there, man. It's because I get there's so many resources. It's unlimited out there because there's so many good gyms to train at, and then you got the UFC PI as like your home base, your recovery, your food, your physical therapy, your strength and conditioning, and then, yeah, like I said, there's good jiu-jitsu gyms, good boxing gyms, good MMA gyms like Extreme Couture and Floyd Jones Jr. and all that. I was just all over the place down there. I just really networked before I went down there. Since May, when we were all down there for the retreat, I've done, I think, 7 trips to Vegas and just really networked in new gyms every time and meeting new people and, you know, getting warm welcomes everywhere.
So TJ was a guest of yours there. Does he get to use all the resources also? How does that work? You bring in a training partner.
Yeah, I went to bat for him for a lot of things just to make sure he got the same. And if there wasn't, I would cover a lot of it just because he was such a big help. And he was getting ready for his own fight. For the most part, he got to do all the same things I did because he was strictly my training partner. And all the people at the PI knew, you know, this guy's here exactly for Jeremy. So, you know, if he has a little injury, we'll give him this treatment to help him out too, because in turn it helped me out, you know. So he got a lot of extra help as well.
That's great. That's a great resource for the fighters.
Absolutely. A lot of it is prevention, you know, like they're right on top of it. You know, I felt fresh and felt good to be pushing in the gym every day. And that's why I think my weight is so good and my conditioning is so good right now, is because every day was a new day out there. And it was like, it didn't matter what I did the rest of the week, because I was so well, you know, prepared and recovered and sleeping good and everything like that, that by the time the weekend came, I put on a hard week, but I felt great, you know?
So one topic we've had on the show so far today is these super fights, the champion versus champion fights. And there's a rumor that there could be up to 3 of them this year in the UFC. What do you think of them? Do you think they hold up divisions, or do you think that they're something that's good for the fans, good for the fighters, and good for the observers?
Well, one I can tell you right now I'm very excited for is the Dillashaw and Demetrius fight. I think that's probably my number one I'm excited to see. And then in the other super fights, I think they just announced DC and Cormier. I mean, DC and Miocic, which is, I think, I can't pick a winner, to be honest. So those are the fights that I love, I get interested about, is the ones you can't really, you don't know who's going to win just because they're both on such a streak, you know? So it's cool that one of those streaks kind of has to have a little bit of a hiccup.
Yeah, I love it. I love these champion versus champion fights because they're always going to be close fights. They're champions.
Especially with the light heavyweight and heavyweight division, there's no, like, surging contenders that got to get sidelined right now anyways, you know? And bantamweight, you can let Rivera and you know, Garbrandt go at it just for to really get a clear-cut guy, you know? And flyweight still needs some grooming to a new contender. So it's perfect to keep the champs busy and to make these big money fights. The champs get paid, and everyone's excited about them. You know, I don't know one person who's, you know, complaining about those fights that wouldn't want to watch it, you know?
Well, Jeremy, I love picking your brain. I could talk to you all day. I do really appreciate your time and enjoy having you here on the TSN MMA show. Canada's behind you, and it's great to see an undefeated prospect go into Australia and try to beat one of their prospects. I mean, we saw that Ultimate Fighter Smashers show. Is that the one, Ultimate Fighter Nations? We saw how that went for the Canadians against the Australians. So let's keep that trend going.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
There's Jeremy Kennedy, undefeated Canadian, facing Alexander Volkanovsky during the prelim cards. You can catch that on TSN. At 8 p.m. Eastern, I believe it's on TSN2. So that'll be fun to watch. Yeah, it's during the Olympics. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So that should be an interesting fight. But the thing that interested me, Joe, and I want to get your take on this because you've done weigh-ins before.
Yeah.
He's a little bit annoyed that he has to weigh in basically at 11 a.m. on the Saturday and then fight less than 24 hours later at around 9 a.m. on the Sunday. So he's been walking around at a lighter weight so that he doesn't have to cut as much because without IVs, they're not really able to replenish, at an expedited fashion. So what do you think of that?
Well, I think eventually now the way the direction commissions are looking, eventually people aren't going to be able to cut as much weight anymore. So I think that's going to be an issue.
But Max Holloway actually came out this week and said, I might have to move up to 155.
Absolutely. I saw that. And I mean, it's going to happen to a lot more guys. And I think it's
champion versus champion fight. Let's go. Another one this year. We get four in a year.
So the problem is with fighters, we become very ritual. We become very obsessed, and we have almost like an OCD mentality when it comes to things. Everything has to be like, if something changes, we freak out because it's like this big, the world's going to end that, you know, we have a weight cut as an hour off. In reality, it's not that big of a difference. If anything, you know, do your weight cut maybe 2 hours later. Stay hydrated fine, and then, you know, deplete a little bit after. Then the issue is replenishing. Well, replenish properly. Get your stuff in. A lot of times, you know, you don't learn how to replenish properly. Some people, for example, after weigh-ins, you haven't had food in your stomach for, you know, 24 hours. You fast, so you don't eat and you don't drink for 24 hours. So now when you time to eat and drink again, the problem is everyone does, they just eat food. And it's terrible for your stomach. So you spike your insulin. Your stomach is so tiny because it hasn't had anything. So now you're just blowing it up and it's going to be hard to absorb. So that's when you just drink fluids. There's way to do it. So I just think he's over panicking. It's a small thing in the bigger picture. Like, the bigger picture is you're fighting on a big stage in Australia. There's more to worry about than a 2 hour difference in weight, in my opinion.
Well, you challenged me to cut down to 135.
Yeah, you're still thinking about it.
I had nightmares about it this week. Yeah? Actually, I had a dream where I had easily cut down to 142 pounds because of just by changing my diet. And then I was like, yeah, this is going to be a breeze. And then I like looked at my watch, and it was like the night before I was supposed to do the weigh-in with you. And I was like, I need to lose 7 pounds in like the span of 12 hours. And then I woke up.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what ended up happening.
You're getting scared. It's getting into your head.
Yeah, it's in my head.
It's going to be 7. You're going to do set. You're going to get there, and you're like, oh, this is easy. This was no problem. A little Epsom salt baths, a little sweat out, no eat or no drink for 24 hours, you're good.
Yeah, that's the part that bothers me. But I've done it before. I've done it for my whole life.
Every
year I do
it. Now, like, intermittent fasting, and fasting's healthy for you.
I'm not buying into that. They also said juice cleanses were...
Cleanses are stupid.
Yeah, but they weren't at the time. And the Atkins diet at the time was great. And then people realize it's like, oh, no, that wasn't good. And in fact, it's very unhealthy to do that.
Well, sugars are bad. Insulin, you're spiking your insulin all the time. So I don't know. I've been playing around with the intermittent fasting. I like it so far.
Yeah, you're doing a ketogenic diet, right?
Yeah, I'm trying it. I mean, I'm all about trying different things. And my big thing in life is I want to be able to try things. Like, I mean, it's not crazy to be on a ketogenic diet, but there's research that it helps with, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, helps with brain recovery. So a lot of good brain research is saying when you're in ketosis, you know, it's better for your brain. You know, fat's a better energy source than carbohydrates are. So regardless, if they're saying it's helping with dementia, if they're helping with Alzheimer's, hey, fighting we got something called CTE, you know, playing around. So all of that stuff, it's going to help with neurodegenerative diseases, I'm in. So if I can try it and I can get some experience, and then I can share with everyone as ways to help, you know, brain injuries post-career. So we'll see what's up.
Well, one last thing I wanted to talk to you about, Joe. Yesterday, Bell Canada raised almost $7 million for mental health initiatives with Bell Let's Talk.
I love that.
And Mauro Ranallo is very outspoken. He was online talking about his own struggles with depression. But where's that at in the fight game? Like, in terms of fighters, do they talk openly about this kind of thing? Is this something where fighters need to start stepping up and being a little bit more open about any struggles they might have with mental health?
Absolutely. I think we need to all get out there and talk a little bit more about it. And I think there's an example of, I mean, it's... The former Glory's women champion, Tiffany Van Soest.
Right, yeah, she's
a great example. Yeah, she just came out and did this whole, I forget the name of it, but like where you do poetry.
Yeah, beat poetry, yeah.
Yeah. So she came out and talked about her struggles with anxiety and social anxiety and how she doesn't like to go. And everyone thinks she's this world champion star fighting in front of millions. But really, at home, she's like, she has a little bit of anxiety and nerves and social problems and connecting with people and meeting new people. So for her to come out and do that, everyone's like, all right, we're normal people. Even people at the highest, you know, you look at your movie stars and all these people you look up to, you know, everybody's dealing with some sort of mental health. So, and I'm a big, you know, believer in, we all got to be there. And I mean, we got to understand, like, I mean, even with my concussions and stuff like that, there's depression, man. Depression is real. And I mean, it's not easy to talk about it. It's not easy to talk to your friends. As a guy, if I even asked my friends, hey, man, do you want to talk about it? I'm feeling depressed. They wouldn't even know how to react to it. My parents probably wouldn't know how to react to it. But I mean, it's just, you just got to talk about it. I don't know. I can go off for hours and hours about ranting about it, but mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, it's good to see. You know, and every year I try to make a post on my Facebook account with my friends and family talking about the things that I go through over the course of a year. You know, we all have our things,
sure.
Right? So, you know, anxiety's been something that I've struggled with for years and years. And last year it came to a head a couple times. The year before it came to a head a couple times. So
yeah,
it happens.
It's even with me now. Like, I mean, I'm still get a little nervous sometimes when I do my on cameras and stuff like that. I'm getting nervous. I'm like, I'm just not there yet. But I do it. You have to learn. You got to force yourself through different things. I think that's where you get better. Now, you know, even maybe I don't know how your anxiety was, but look, you're on TV. You're on shows. Jay
that
and Dan.
For some reason, that never bothers me.
Really?
I don't know what it is. I don't get any nervous.
See, I get that. That's my thing.
If somebody came to me right now and said, Aaron, in 10 minutes, you need to go speak to a big crowd, it wouldn't bother me. But if it was like, if my wife called me and was like, oh, I found, you know, a glass broke at home and, you know, my son.
So then you freak out.
Then I like get worried.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's little
more
things.
More of a worrier.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's good to have though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even if I know that, if I know that my wife didn't get a lot of sleep last night or I didn't get a lot of sleep, like those kind of things, like just the fallout from that can bother me all day and like get in my head.
Snowball effect.
But but if somebody said like, Aaron, you know, somebody wants you to go and talk about basketball in front of a crowd of 100 people in 10 minutes, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, see, then I'd panic.
Yeah, and, even, and no, 99% of people
I could do it. I would
it's
do it. I could do it, no problem.
I guess people are triggered by different things in terms of...
Yeah, I would do it, no problem. I could play it off well. I can play it, but deep inside, I'd be super nervous and that kind of thing, but I can play it off well.
Yeah. I also have, like with that kind of thing, sometimes I have positive anxiety. I'm
you love it.
Yeah, like I get a rush from it.
Yeah, maybe because you've been with TSN for so long and you've seen people do it and you're like, it's not as bad as people think. Like, you know, the camera guy, you know, the person you're talking to, and you're just comfortable with it. And even your interviews, like I said, like even from now being with this podcast and radio show with you, I've seen how much you've evolved as well. Like, I mean, your interviews are amazing now. Like when you go onto your shows and the way you talk to the fighters, the questions you ask really well. I mean, big improvements for sure.
It's just reps.
Yeah, it's really good. You're really doing a good job with those interviews. I like it.
Well, thank you. There will be more to come. I'm probably not going to another event until UFC 223 in Brooklyn in April.
You're not going to Australia?
No.
Oh, okay. That would have been pretty cool.
No, I'm not going to Australia.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited, though. Why I'm excited for Australia, like, I mean, Romero, Rockhold, all great, all excited, but I'm excited for one fight, and that's my guy, Israel Adesanya.
Yeah,
former
Adesanya
Glory fighter.
We haven't talked about him yet.
Man, I'm pumped. He's fighting
that guy's a
tough
beast.
Guy. He's fighting
a
tough opponent. I can't remember what's the guy's name, but
I
think
card.
He's 11-0.
Yeah.
The guy he's fighting is a
Melvin
really
Gallard.
Big name.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy he's fighting, let me see right here. It's right here. Wilkinson.
Yeah,
Rob Wilkinson.
Yeah. Good fighter.
11-1. I mean, Adesanya they have as 11-0, but yeah, he's fun to watch. And I mean, I think he's gonna be that. you know, Michael Venom Page, that style of being unorthodox and good finishing, exciting. That's who Israel Adesanya is. And he's going to be a great speaker on the mic. He's going to be an exciting fighter. He's going to knock people out, man.
He's Australian too, right?
New Zealand.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just
I shouldn't say yeah. The Kiwis are very different from people in Australia. I don't want to offend any
of
our Kiwi listeners.
You can say anything. I'd be like, sure.
Yeah, well, it's like saying that we're American. That's what it would be.
Tandem okay.
To.
Yeah.
They don't like that. Yeah.
All right. but yeah, so I'm pumped for him, man. I'm super excited to see what he does. I think his last MMA fight, he knocked out Melvin Goulart, in spectacular fashion, which looked awesome. But the way he fights is great, exciting. I would say in kickboxing, if someone asked me, he'd be my top three to watch in kickboxing.
Really? Wow. Okay. Yeah.
He'd be my top three just because they call him the style bender, and I love it because he mixes and matches so many different concepts of fighting. Like, he'll fight orthodox, he'll fight southpaw, he'll box you. He's has professional boxing fights, so he can box really well. His kicking game is really good. He can knee, and he just mixes and matches, and it's just you never know what to expect. And it's just I think he's going to do big things in the UFC.
Yeah, well, I was stoked to see that that he was signed to the roster.
Yeah, so another guy. I think he's going to do a lot better than, like, if you're talking about kickboxers in UFC, he's going to do better than Golovkin Saki. You know, Golovkin Saki is going to probably have some 2 or 3, 4 good striker fights, and that's probably it. I can't see Golovkin Saki going against the top in the division. His wrestling's going to lack. So, but I think Adesanya's young. His style and the way he fights, he can really give wrestlers a lot of trouble. So I think it's going to be really hard to take him down as well. So I think he's just going to just dominate. I think he's going to do really well. Yeah. I mean, if he focuses on his wrestling, he's going to be in the top 10 before we know it.
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing that they announced this week for UFC 222 in Las Vegas is that the co-main event is Andrei Arlovsky versus Stefan Struve.
Oof. Yeah.
So what is this, like 2010?
But even these fight nights, like, look at Emmett. Emmett getting a main card slot against Jeremy Stephens.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true on Fox.
Emmett's, what, second fight in the UFC?
No, it's the second fight since coming back to featherweight, I think.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean...
But he's now considered a top five guy because he beat Lamas.
Yeah, but still.
Who knows? That'll be a fun fight, but I agree with you. I think that would be more of a regular fight.
Yeah, Jeremy Stephens can be on it, but I mean, I think he needs another guy to promote with.
Yeah. Well, I think apparently, I don't know if this card's on Fox, but I think it might be the April card with Gaethje Poirier. And another rumor for that card is Matt Brown and Carlos Condit. Like, whew, that's a good card.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Matt Brown, Carlos Condit would be awesome.
That's going to be a fun fight.
A lot of elbows, a lot of blood, lot of cuts. That, to me, already has fight of the night. Because
Poirier and Gaethje might make a case for that, too.
I don't know, man. I like Condit's style, the way he uses his elbows, even though I picked him on one of our betting lines and I lost. But, I mean, still fun to watch. And, yeah, Mike Brown, not too long out of retirement. What, did he retire for a month?
He said he was going to retire, and then before that last fight, he's like, I don't know.
Yeah,
and
because he did so well. He got the elbow knockout.
No, even before that fight, he said he wasn't sure if it was going to be his last fight. He was getting really amped up for the fight.
It'll always be hard to leave.
Yeah, so I don't know if they're going to change the co-main event of UFC 222 or if it's already set, but they could probably do better than Struve and Arlovsky.
What's your take on Ronda Rousey?
We didn't get to that yet. Yeah. Rousey in the WWE, lest we forget. You know what? I thought she was interviewed afterwards by Ramona Shelburne, and Ramona said, what do you have to say about your two losses? And she goes, I'm not ready to talk about that yet. Like, her losses to Nunes and Holm. And I'm thinking, like, it's been like over
still
a year.
Still holding on to it, eh?
Yeah, like, I can't believe that still. I guess that just goes to show the kind of competitor she is, that it affects her that much, but... Yeesh. But at the same time, I think it's great for Ronda. Like, Ronda doesn't owe the MMA community anything.
No.
You know, she did things on her own terms. She brought women's MMA into the forefront, made it a reality for a lot of women that needed work and wanted to make it a legitimate thing. And if not for her, it might never have come to the UFC. And it was nice seeing her out there. It was nice seeing her smiling again. Like, the last thing that sticks in your head of Ronda is her getting knocked out by Nunes in devastating fashion.
And then hightailing
it out. Yeah.
Especially seeing how she came back from it after hearing. Because apparently, we don't really know the story, but she suffered a lot of mental health stuff in that time with her losses, right? She really took it really hard. So now to see her bounce back, I mean, I think she's going to really have to work on the acting side of things, which is, again, going to come with time.
Yeah, it'll take
which
time.
Which is one of the hardest.
I don't really agree with how they used her there.
Because they didn't put her on the mic. They didn't do anything, right?
Yeah, well, they should make her, if this is what I would do if I was the WWE and I had the book. I would go and say, have Ronda come out to, or have Ronda come out in the middle of the ring, pull out a list of tweets. A lot of these women's WWE divas have been sending out tweets that they don't like.
They don't
that
like
Ronda's
her.
Getting all the attention and all this stuff. Have her come out and say, here's a list of the women who have been bashing me on Twitter. And then say, this is real right now. If you want to come down and have a shoot, here, watch these videos. Here's videos of me finishing four women in under a minute, in under 30 seconds. Here, watch this. If any of you wanna have a, you know, wanna come out and you wanna challenge me, let's go. This isn't wrestling. This is real.
A little Brock Lesnar.
Yeah,
you know?
and then
that little
have
real
like
style.
Maybe two or three kind of jobber women come out and challenge her. Have her armbar them. Judo
I was
going to
say
armbar.
The armbar's got to be her thing.
Yeah.
I hope they come in. They make the armbar her thing.
That would
be
awful if they didn't.
Yeah, I would be so upset.
Even get her to do flying armbar stuff like that, like really fun. But she was doing innovative stuff like that in real fights,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like she was.
She'll
she
have
was,
someone in an armbar and they're trying to reach for the ropes now. Like it's gonna be cool. I think it'd be all right.
Yeah, but they need to do it properly. Like they should big her up like that, where
make her a UFC fighter.
Yeah. Make her gimmick. Make it say
like Brock, because Brock wears the MMA glove, right? And the MMA shorts.
Yeah.
So I mean, do the same thing with her.
Yeah,
it's not a bad thing to have an MMA fighter in it, and that as that
have her
and
be
it'll
kind
be
of
easier
a heel
for
also.
Her.
Yeah.
And it'll be easier for her to, you know, be herself acting, right? Because she doesn't really have to act. She can just be herself.
Yeah. Well, it's still pro wrestling at the end of the day, but at the same time, you have a good opportunity here to elevate her. I don't know how it's going to – I mean, I don't know enough about pro wrestling to know how it's going to go over and, you know, whether or not she's actually going to be able to convert her skills into in-ring skills. I know she's been training for a couple months, so we'll see how that part goes. She has time until WrestleMania. The rumor is it's going to be her and The Rock against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, which is good because they can carry her, like especially The Rock.
For sure.
The Rock can carry her. So we'll see
That's
how that
huge.
Goes.
That's huge.
But, you know, now that we've talked about the biggest news in MMA this week, Ronda Rousey going to the WWE, we can wrap this baby up. You know, hopefully we can see some more of these champion versus champion fights get confirmed over the next little bit. And
when's your piece coming out?
It should be out, I think, on Friday. So tomorrow, tsn.ca/UFC.
Right,
you can get that there. And then I should also mention that UFC Fight Night Belém airs at 10 p.m. Eastern on TSN2. The prelims are on Fight Pass and Fight Network at 8 p.m. Eastern. So you don't want to miss that. The main card is very, very good for this particular card. Although six fight main cards can drag. So let's hope we get some finishes in there. But Joe, it's been a fun week.
Yeah,
we'll be back
awesome.
Next week. We'll have Luke Rockhold on the show to talk about his chance to get back the middleweight strap, albeit the interim strap against Yoel Romero. And until then, enjoy the fights this week, and we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.